Hey, folks, thanks for tuning back in to the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. It is Thursday, so you know it's time for the Weekend Picks panel. We are looking at Week 5. It's not an incredible week of action, but certainly a week of interesting point spreads if you're interested in those things, and that's why this podcast is here for you. Leading us off today will be Brian Fisher, Jerry Hinnon will follow, and Tom Fornelli will take us home. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Brian Fisher, CBSSports.com Ion College Football blogger and recruiting guru. Brian, I gave you a slate of five games. I'll let you start. Which of these five games do you want to talk about first?
Let's start on the Thursday game, the big matchup up in the Pacific Northwest with Stanford and Washington.
Yeah, so we've got Washington at home. They have not looked great. They are a 7.5-point underdog to the Cardinal the way we picked it. Stanford, of course, has... You know, they've got that front seven. They've got that bruising rushing attack. They've changed a lot of people's minds in the last week, especially the win over Southern California. Josh Nunez looks like he can be, you know, that replacement. He steps in. He's done a great job. How have you picked this game, and how do you see it playing out?
I picked Stanford. I think coming off a bye, that's a team that's going to be prepared for whatever Washington can throw it at them. I think, you know, at night, up in Seattle, it obviously makes it probably a closer game than a lot of people will expect it to be. But, you know, keep in mind, last time these two teams met last year, everybody talks about Andrew Luck, but the running game is very strong for the Cardinal, and they piled up 446 yards against that Huskies defense. School record for them, a 65-21 route. I mean, it wasn't even close at any point in that game. I can see it being a tad closer just because some of the personnel has changed, but Stanford's rushing attack is one of the best in the country. They really grind it out. That keeps the score a little bit closer than a lot of, you know, you might expect for a top five team, or in this case, a top eight team. But, you know, I like Stanford. I just don't think Washington has the depth. They have issues along the offensive line, so it's going to be tough to protect against Keith Price. I just find it a hard for Stanford to really keep this a close game. They're going to want to put it away early.
Yeah, offensive line and defense, two huge concerns for Washington. You know, they bring in new defensive coordinator, but things really still haven't looked a ton better there for the Huskies. I agree with you. I also picked Stanford to cover the 7.5. All right, we'll move on to another Pac-12 matchup. Oregon State getting up into the top 25 after knocking off UCLA. They sort of showed with Sean Mannion, he's starting to step up, become that kind of quarterback. The defense showed that it was not a fluke shutting down Monte Ball. And Arizona, who after getting blanked 49-0 against Oregon, gets to stay at home and prepare for Oregon State. The Wildcats, unranked, are favored by 3.5. How'd you pick this one, and what are some of the keys to the game the way you see it?
You know, I went with Arizona. I think the issues that they had up in Eugene, in the red zone in particular, are going to get fixed this week. I think that's the one emphasis that Rich Rodriguez will try to tell his team that they need to correct and will in practice. And, you know, you look at Oregon State, they've done a phenomenal job. Mike Riley is one of the best coaches in the country and the nicest coach in the country for sure. And he's got his team playing well. Sean Mannion's very good at quarterback. Injured his shoulder a little bit in that win against UCLA. Was not practicing as of Monday. Kind of came back later in the week. You never know if he gets hit, what, you know, what kind of effect that will have on him. But I think Arizona at home is the difference in a very close game that is really a matchup between two teams that are kind of right on the cusp of being top 20 good. And, you know, Arizona was ranked last year before they lost to Oregon, or last week before they lost to Oregon. But I really think this is a very close game, really a coin flip game. But I think Arizona has the firepower and offense that can outscore UCLA and certainly cover that 3.5.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I picked Oregon State, and I will absolutely admit that it was just one of those that was a bettor's pick over a college football analyst pick, just because at the 3.5, and I think this is, I cannot get a good read on this game. Arizona, you know, they had five turnovers. A lot of that was probably the Oregon defense, you know, a credit to them. But at the same time, that's the type of mistakes that Oregon State's defense would love to be able to take advantage of. I definitely see it as a close game. And the thing that terrifies me whenever looking at this kind of matchup is that this could be there's so much speed, especially you look at somebody like Kadeem Carey, the Arizona running back. This could be a, you know, 1 or 2 or even 3 point Arizona lead. So Oregon State's covering one or two missed tackles, Kadeem Carey to the house, and all of a sudden that's a Wildcats cover. So it, I feel like any time you've got that much speed and ability to score quickly, any of these single score or less than single score spreads are a little scary.
Yeah, and I think that's why you kind of got to go with the home team. You know, it's a raucous atmosphere down there in Tucson. The crowd will be into it. And this is a game that really shows, you know, what are the Wildcats made of? Because, you know, you get blown out at Oregon, and it's a tough loss because of the way it happened and the end result. And I think they're going to come out fired up and ready to go. And, you know, a lot of people talk about the depth of the Pac-12. I think this is a game that proves it, because these are two very solid teams going at it this weekend.
We're going to stay right there in the Pac-12. This one will likely not show a lot of the depth, but who knows? We could be surprised. Oregon hits the road. They play Washington State up in Pullman. The Cougars, first year under Mike Leach, obviously very, very disappointing. I think they might be 0-3 against the spread. They have not done well with the odds makers, and all the CBSSports.com experts pick Oregon minus 28.5 against Washington State. So instead of asking you who you're going to pick, where would you set an appropriate line between Oregon and Washington State if you were an odds maker?
You know, I think you're looking maybe around 35, 37 in that range. You know, you look at what Oregon has done offensively. They have so many weapons. They can score so quickly. I think that's the one thing that not a lot of people think about when you're looking at that in line. They can score with backups in 2 minutes or less. I mean, Bryant Bennett came in and played against the Arizona. You know, you would likely think that he would end up in this game at some point because it'll get out of hand. You know, Washington State, let's face it, they lost to a bad Colorado team. And, Mike Leach's style is one where it's going to cost him games sometimes, but it's also going to win him some games. I think he's going to be throwing a lot. They're going to be behind, incomplete passes, turnovers. That's going to be an issue that plays into this final result. And I don't see how Washington State could keep it close, even though the game is, up in Seattle. It's a little different, split. It should probably be half Oregon fans up there, but going to be interesting to see just how far Oregon is out ahead of the Cougars.
Yeah, I look at this one playing out the same way that the Arizona game did, where, you know, it could be in. I do not think Washington State doesn't have what Arizona has defensively, obviously. But, you know, that game was 13-0 for a while, the Oregon-Arizona game. And then, you know, that Oregon secondary stepped up. You get a pair of pick sixes, you know, the interceptions, and just it's – there's that mode that Oregon's defense has, which really I think is – the reason that they jumped up to number 2 in the polls is if you make a single mistake, be it a fumble recovery, an interception, there's just so much speed on that defense that they can take it to the house every time.
Absolutely. And I think you look at the Washington State defense has not seen an attack like this either. I mean, you've got good guys in practice like Marquez Wilson and some of the other guys, but you haven't seen a Marcus Mariota throw with the touch that he has. You haven't seen a DeAnthony Thomas that can score like he has, and so many weapons on Oregon's offense that it's going to be tough. And as we saw last week, that defense is really, really good and versatile. They rotate a lot of guys in there. It's just going to be tough for a Washington State team that has issues up front on the offensive line. I don't think they're set at quarterback yet because they really haven't had any consistency out of that position. And let's face it, their top player in Wilson has been dropping touchdowns. You know, he's had several drops throughout the season, and that's cost him a game last week, and probably will in future games. And eventually, I think the Pirate will get the ship turned around, but certainly not this week.
Let's move over to an ACC Big East matchup. Florida State, fresh off their big, big win against Clemson. Those marching back down from 28-14 in the third quarter, have 5 straight touchdowns, 5 straight possessions. EJ Manuel, 380 yards passing, 102 yards rushing. Seminoles are riding high. South Florida is at home on the exact opposite track. They just lost to Ball State. The line that as where we picked it was Florida State -16.5. Do you see enough of a letdown for Florida State to maybe get a scare, or do you have the Seminoles running out way with this?
I got them running away with it. That offense, that, you know, combined with that defense that makes plays that put some pressure on you, I think it's just going to be tough for South Florida to really hang in this. You know, they lost to Ball State. You never know how good a team they are. I wonder, with B.J. Daniels out there at quarterback, who is prone to making just dumbfounded mistakes at times. He'll make plays where you no doubt about that, but sometimes he'll make mistakes at the most inopportune time. And if there's a defense that I can capitalize on, it's Florida State's. With that defensive line, with those linebackers, with the secondary and the speed they have on the back end, you know, I think the defense could end up scoring as many points as Florida State's South Florida's offense. I really think there's a possibility of that in this game. But you know, Florida State has scored 49 points plus the last couple of games, and I wouldn't expect anything less in this game against South Florida.
Yeah, the South Florida's, you know, they're a mess right now, and all the players have been talking all week about how, you know, the defense was, you know, we were not attacking, we were sitting back, we were, you know, there's, it seems like they're just not very sound, not very together. And if there's one word that I could use to describe Florida State's offensive attack last week, it was sound. It was bruising. It was sound. They wear you down. And if South Florida is a little bit lacking in depth, the secondary is, I think, just starting to get healthy now. And I'm right there with you. I see Florida State winning this. And I'm not a believer that Florida State thinks that they should be beating the pants off of everybody in order to help impress voters and reputation and all that. I just think that that's the attitude of this team, that they just want to go out and beat everyone by as much as they can. They just, I don't see them letting off the gas pedal at all. And same with Oregon. Those are just two teams that I just see the nature of each team. I could see them winning by a lot of big point margins this year.
I agree completely. Let's face it, they're playing in a weaker league. The schedule sets up for Florida State to really run the table until at least you know, getting difficult at the end of the year with Florida and the ACC championship game. But very curious, after that big win, can they get up for this? It's a road game, first time leaving you know, home. I would expect them to be prepared and ready to face a team that, let's face it, it's an in-state rivalry. You know, it's not to the level of a Florida or a Miami, but certainly anytime you play a team in the state, you want to beat them and beat them bad. And I wouldn't expect anything less out of a top five team like Florida State.
All right, we'll send you out on this one. Boise State, fresh off their 7-6 barn burner with BYU, is traveling to face New Mexico. The Broncos are 26.5-point favorites. And I see on the expert picks, you've got Boise State covering 26.5. So, Brian, tell me how an offense that produced zero touchdowns, with Mike Atkinson's fat guy touchdown being the only score of the game, how is Joe Southwick going to get this turned around? And I know New Mexico's bad, but clearly you think they are that bad to at least have Boise State win by 27 or more.
Yeah, if you watch that game against BYU, you saw an offense that struggled against a very solid defense. That's a very physical BYU defense. They hit guys in the mouth. New Mexico's not going to do anything like that. I mean, they're ranked 95th in the country. They're giving up a ton of yards. That offense for New Mexico is in the hundreds in a lot of categories. They give up a lot of sacks. You know, they're really allowing quarterbacks to go through the air, and that's not just because when they've played Texas and Texas Tech, they've given up big points, but you know, even in their wins, they haven't, you know, been super sharp against weaker competition. I just think this is what Boise State you know, needs in terms of the perfect bounce back opponent for the offense. They're going to want to try to establish the ball. I think Joe Southwick will look much better as his line gets some protection issues figured out, and I think that Boise State defense, I think they're going to create a lot of pressure on New Mexico. That's going to force turnovers. That means better field position for the offense. You know, I think with the amount of formations that Boise State throws at you, they're going to get some kind of trick play. They're going to go over the top. They're going to get some long touchdowns, and it wouldn't shock me at all if they do end up covering that big margin. Even though the offense has struggled in the past, New Mexico is the perfect recipe for that.
Do you have any big time proclamations, or you want to preview your upset bait, or anything on the board? Just your chance to give a big declaration for Week 5.
You know, it's such a weak slate. I'm not sure you can do that. I mean, you look up and down, and maybe the most interesting game might be a Baylor at West Virginia, just because it's the first Mountaineers Big 12 game, and obviously those are two high flying offense. You got a Heisman Trophy candidate in Geno Smith. Curious to see how that one plays out, but just kind of a really weak slate. And you look at the Big Ten, they as conference play. They need those teams that are already in the top 25 to keep winning if they're going to have any chance of kind of salvaging the season. Ohio State has to beat Michigan State if there's going to be any consideration of that conference having an elite team. And the same for Nebraska. I think, you look at their division, and it certainly sets up to where they have a chance to win it. And so I think it's a big weekend for them against Wisconsin. A lot of interesting matchups. Can't wait to see them.
He is Brian Fisher. Be sure you follow on Twitter at Brian D. Fisher. And, Brian, where are you going to be this weekend again?
I am up in Stillwater for Texas and Oklahoma State. Curious to see how the Longhorns look. David Ash has obviously been sharper, so far earlier in the season, but they haven't seen a team like Oklahoma State. We don't know what Wes Lunt, if he's going to play or if it's going to be J.W. Walsh. So a very intriguing game this weekend.
All right, thanks so much. Be sure to stick around after the break. We got Jerry Hinnon breaking down the SEC and some more matchups for you. And welcome back. Our thanks to Brian for hopping on and knocking out the first slate. As we move it along to a Weekend Picks panel regular panelist, he is Mr. Jerry Hinnon, and he is continuing to bring the heat in the expert picks. Once again, you and Dodd out ahead of pretty much everybody else. I think with Tom's in third place, six games below 500, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
We're
not really as an entire group covering ourselves in glory against the spread to this point.
Do you have any good sort of defense of our picks? Because I'll say that the fact that we have to pick some games that are normally off the board, I'm claiming that as a reason why we might be able to have worse records than our actual picks.
Sure, we can blame that. I think the main thing, though, is, and I touched on this a little bit last week, is that as sort of amateur against the spread pickers, I don't think any of us are really major hardcore gamblers who have spent years researching spreads or anything like that. I think it's really easy for us to look at favorites and think, well, these are the really good teams and they ought to beat these lesser teams really handily, and then expect all the favorites to sort of sweep. And it's been exactly the opposite so far this year. For the most part, we've seen underdogs cover at a really, really high rate, which is pretty much the opposite of last year. I think last year, we were all right around 500 or a little bit over it. And this year, as we pointed out, everybody but Dodd and myself, unfortunately for the group, is behind 500 a little bit. So I think that's probably the main cause, is just that we haven't been diligent enough in searching out those underdogs that are probably going to cover, and being a little bit too easy to look at a game like a USC versus Syracuse type game, where there's a lot of reasons to think the underdog is going to cover, and then we just don't see them in our rush to expect the favorite to roll.
Yeah, I would say our employers are probably happy to hear that we are not spending hours upon hours crunching lines for expert picks with little monetary value. Yeah, I think it's fair. All right, let's jump right into your specific area of expertise. We got three SEC conference battles. Start with number one team in the nation, Alabama. They will be hosting Ole Miss. They are a 31.5 points favorite. They did not cover last week, put the brakes on a little bit. How do you see this one against the Rebels playing out, and do you see them covering 31.5?
I do, actually. I think we're sort of seeing a little bit with Alabama where they're very sort of cautiously managing their effort, from week to week. Against Western Kentucky, did not go all out, came back the next week and just destroyed Arkansas, as we all remember. Came back last week on the podcast. I thought they would roll over FAU, cover what I think was a 52-point spread. And it looked okay at the half. They were up 30-0 and then just totally shut it down in the second half. Ended up winning 40-7 and not coming close to covering. I think you have to wonder if they are ahead, 35-10, let's say, in the fourth quarter, are they really going to put the gas pedal down and cover? You can't really expect that at this point. I don't think Nick Saban wants to run it up and embarrass sort of the new kid on the block. At the same time, I think they're going to be way more motivated for this game than they were last week. Basically, Alabama's played two games against lesser competition and, sort of slogged around and didn't cover. And they've played two games against real competition in Michigan and Arkansas and completely blown the doors off of those teams. So I think we're looking at another more of a let's blow the doors off game than a let's slog around game. But, to some extent, you don't know until it happens. Like I said, this is the sort of game where Alabama's going to have to cover in the first three quarters because it's not going to be close in the fourth quarter. And, Alabama's not going to go out of their way to pile up points on the Rebels.
Where do you – how much do you give Ole Miss a chance to put up any points at all? Because, of course, when you're looking at, like, a 30-plus point spread, you always want to say, Alabama's defense can keep Ole Miss from the end zone. But do you think Ole Miss has the offensive firepower to be able to get a touchdown against the twos or the threes or the fours, backdoor cover in the fourth quarter type thing?
Yeah. I think they do, honestly. Bo Wallace, has done some good things so far this season. There's a little bit of a doubt as to whether he'll play, though, which is kind of interesting. He didn't practice yesterday, Tuesday. I expect he'll play on Saturday, but he's a little bit banged up, which is another point, I think, in Alabama's favor here. If Wallace plays, though, I think you could see Ole Miss put up, maybe 14 points, even 17. Hugh Freeze is an excellent offensive coach. He'll have some ideas about how to attack that Alabama defense. They scored 31 points against Texas. The downside is they allowed 66. And again, that was a 35-point spread between those two teams when all was said and done, and that was in Oxford. So again, it's hard for me to see them going to Tuscaloosa and doing better than that. I think Alabama can put up somewhere in the neighborhood of the mid-40s, maybe, even 48, 49 points on that defense. It's just a matter of whether they want to.
Moving from the SEC West to the SEC East, Georgia. They finally get back Bakari Rambo and Ogletree from suspension. Tennessee's coming to town. They are favored by 13.5 points. It's really an intriguing matchup because we've loved some of what Georgia's defense has been able to show. We still haven't seen them full strength. I want to get your read on the game, and then also your against the spread pick.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think you have to favor Georgia to win the game.
Right.
Just that defense, especially with Ogletree and Rambo back, is going to be a top 10 defense in the country when all is said and done, probably top 5. They were basically there last year. I still don't think they've hit their highest gear yet. We might see that this week. And you have to remember that Tennessee does not have a running game. Statistically, they're better than they were last year when they were like 116th, I think. They're in the kind of the middle of the pack so far this year. But they didn't run well against Florida, averaged only 3 yards a carry, got nothing done on the ground in that sort of second half, fourth quarter collapse. So, again, this shapes up as the sort of game, especially going on the road, where Tennessee is going to put it all on Tyler Bray and those wideouts and say, okay, go out and win the game for us. Now, Bray and those wideouts are good enough to make it a game. Again, against Florida, we saw the same thing. Those guys threw it around basically for three quarters, had the lead. So you can't put it past them to make this a game, to maybe even have the ball with the game on the line there at the very end. but I don't see them pulling it out because there's just not enough balance on that Tennessee offense. And then the other thing is Tennessee's defense has not looked good. Gave up 26 points to Akron last week at home. Akron is not good. We've talked about this on the podcast before. They seem to keep popping up. You know, that's not a good team. And to give up that kind of points to them, gave up 555 yards to the Gators the week before, now going on the road. I'm not expecting Tennessee's defense to have a great day. In the end, I think Georgia's just a much better all-around team. They've got a much better defense, a much more balanced offense. And I think they covered the spread. My initial sort of gut reaction was to say, well, you know, if Tennessee plays the way they played those first three quarters of Florida, then this spread is too wide. But, you know, then you look over the entire balance of the season, and I just think, you know, especially with the trends that Tennessee has, 1-8 against the spread in the SEC over their last nine games. It won't surprise me if they cover, but I think you have to side with the Bulldogs.
Yeah, I see. I don't think it would be hard for Georgia to get 31 points. And, you know, a 31-17 is sort of as close as I see that
right.
one getting. So
yeah.
I agree with you there. Let's stay in the SEC East. We got number 6, South Carolina. Connor Shaw puts together the game of his life last week. They go on the road to play a Kentucky team that, man, the Wildcats is it. I can't tell if it's the coaching staff that's given up, if that was just a one-game thing. Is there any hope to seriously, I mean, it was. I think somebody said on Twitter, it was like it looked like Kentucky had zero plans to show up for that game. And whether that's staff, players, or what, something is wrong. How bad has it gotten for Kentucky, and do they have a chance at home with South Carolina coming in to cover 21.5? Is that too small?
I think they cover this week. Now, that sounds insane. You're right, given the way that they perform against Florida. But I think that came down in large part to Morgan Newton being a quarterback. And it was clear from the first, five, six passes Newton threw that he was completely in over his head, was not ready to play. Apparently, he only found out he was going to play during warm-ups. And I think that from there, it just kind of spread throughout the rest of the team. You're right, they did not put forth any real kind of effort, but I think that was in large part because already Kentucky has a terrible history against Florida, came out, saw Morgan Newton start the game the way he did, which was basically like he'd rather be anywhere but under center for Kentucky against Florida, and everything just kind of went downhill from there. So I'm picking them to cover this week, actually. They get Max Smith back. He's expected to play Saturday. South Carolina, two things going against them. One is they're playing Georgia next week. They know good and well that's pretty much their biggest game of the season. You know, Florida one, the Tennessee ones are going to be really big too, but there's probably no way they win the East if they can't get past Georgia. So first of all, I think they're going to be looking past Kentucky a bit, maybe more than a bit. And then the other thing is that Connor Shaw has been much, much better at home than on the road. Starting last year, he really just was kind of ineffective on the road and really, really effective at home. To some extent, we've seen that continue this season. Did not look especially good the first week at Vanderbilt before coming back, and as you point out, looked like an All-American against Missouri last week at home. So I think between those two factors, you know, I wish the spread was a little bit further since I'm leaning to Kentucky on this one. I wish it was up around 24, 28 points. I'd feel a little bit better. But with it being over that 3-touchdown mark, I'm still siding with Kentucky to cover.
Yeah, and for the record, I realized my setup made it sound like I had selected South Carolina. I picked Kentucky. I did not have as good of a reason as you just laid out. I appreciate that. Mine was basically on two of the things you mentioned, and really – most importantly, the looking ahead to Georgia, just the fact that especially after what we've seen from the SEC East, Florida, you know, obviously can make things very interesting, but that South Carolina team has known that the SEC championship semifinal game is against Georgia. You know, that was just the way. This has been a game that's been circled for months, and then a little bit. You know, I thought back to the Vanderbilt game, and I thought I didn't exactly break down on the road, but I just got one of those gut feelings that this is going to be a slow start for Carolina, And, you know, in any time that you get into a slow start on the road in conference, covering a 3-touchdown spread is going to be a little bit tough.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to LSU, who will be hosting Towson. It gets the CBSSports.com 49.5 off the board spread. Let's change up the way we do this one. Where would you set this spread, and what are you looking for out of LSU?
Yeah, well, first of all, I've cheated. The FBS versus FCS spreads have been released by the time we're looking at this, and I think the one I saw was actually 49 points.
Right.
So we're not far off with our default setting this week, but you know, I have no idea. It's all about what LSU is going to do there in the second half. My guess is I took LSU. My guess is that LSU knows they did not perform well at all last week against Auburn. The offense in particular was not clicking on cylinders. Zach Mettenberger looked, frankly, like a lot of LSU quarterbacks have looked over the last few years, just content to sort of manage the game opposite the running game. And when the running game doesn't do anything, then just not able to step up and really move the ball with any kind of consistency. So I think after that, Miles and his staff will want to kind of get the things back on track, get the wheels greased a little bit, so to speak, and particularly with Mettenberger, get him a little bit more confidence after the little bit of a dud he laid last week. So I'm expecting I'm picking LSU to cover, but again, this is sort of a, you know, how many points is LSU going to score in the second half? I have no idea. You have no idea. Towson has no idea.
Yeah.
And that's really what it comes down to. So taking LSU, but not with a lot of confidence.
Yeah. There's no way to know how this game plays out. The decisions that Miles and the rest of the crew are going to make, this is, you know, like you said, they need a bounce back. They need a blowout win. They need everything clicking offensively. Who knows if it happens, and who knows how committed they are to seeing it happen in the second half. All right, moving on. We're going to wrap up, send you out on this one. A fascinating game. It is also a game that is on CBS Sports Network at 8 o'clock on Saturday night. Number 19, Louisville. It was a game. The game against Florida International was not a very pretty game. Medlock, the Florida International starting quarterback, goes down with an injury in the second quarter. Hilliard comes in, eventually sort of finds a little bit of a rhythm. Teddy Bridgewater throws his first interceptions of the season. I thought it was very interesting to see the way they played on the road. Southern Miss, only a 10.5-point underdog, despite being undefeated. What's your read on this one? I feel like you've always got Matt Hinton both have a very good read on the non-BCS teams. Some of the best, I think, of all the bloggers. So how do you see this one playing out down in Hattiesburg?
Well, first of all, I don't know if my read's too good. I had Louisville covering over FIU last week, and that didn't happen, clearly. But I'm picking them to cover this week again, mainly because Southern Miss just appears to be a complete train wreck at this point. They've already lost to East Carolina at home, and overall the Pirates have not been particularly impressive this season. Last week went up to Western Kentucky. Already they were 4.5-point underdogs, which is kind of shocking when you consider, you know, the Southern Miss is one of the more storied Conference USA programs. You know, is coming off of, I think, an 11-win season, going on the road to face a Sun Belt team as underdogs. And then they apparently were not very motivated by that status because Western Kentucky annihilated them. That game finished, I think, 42-17. Was 42-7 at one point in the third quarter. The yardage was, 600 to 350, somewhere in that range, in favor of the Hilltoppers. Am I confident that Louisville is going to go on the road and in very similar circumstances to last week when they really just were not sharp? As you point out, Teddy Bridgewater really kind of came down from his early season performance, and they ended up, I think, we're very slightly outgained by FIU. That was like 326-323. So really that game could have even been closer than it was. I'm expecting more of that, basically, from Louisville. You know, they know they've got bigger fish to fry down the line. I think they're aware that Southern Miss is not playing well at the moment, but Southern Miss is just playing so poorly at this point, I don't think you can pick them to cover against a legitimate top 25 team. Maybe Louisville's not going to play their best game, but not their best game at this point. You still have to think it's going to be enough to beat the current iteration of Southern Miss by two touchdowns.
Is there any game either in the top 25, not in the top 25, something that we haven't covered that you've got as sort of something you're either looking for or a big upset prediction?
I don't think we're discussing this on the podcast because neither team is ranked, but I'm really interested in this Texas A&M Arkansas game to see exactly how badly the wheels have come off for John L. Smith, and more to the point, how much damage Johnny Manziel and that Texas A&M offense can do against Arkansas secondary, which was absolutely torched by Gary Nova of Rutgers last Saturday. If you read our Arkansas-Texas A&M preview, I filed a keys to the game paragraph today, which basically when you look at Gary Nova's quarterback rating, it goes like 115, 115, 120, 213 is what he posted against the Razorbacks on the road in Fayetteville. That secondary is going to get absolutely torched by Johnny Manziel. And I think this is both A&M's big coming out party and the week that sort of the final nail is driven into John L. Smith's Arkansas coaching coffin. That's what I'm expecting. But, you know, I've certainly been wrong before, and Tyler Wilson's going to have something to say about it. Again, this is, I think, a really sort of momentous game for both those programs. And I'm feeling pretty strongly about A&M covering the 13.5, but we'll see.
Yeah, no, I absolutely think that there's no way. Because that and granted, Gary Nova is getting better, but he's not 397 yards, five touchdowns better.
No.
Yeah, not at all. All right, he is Jerry Hinnon. You can follow him on Twitter at Jerry Hinnon. And, of course, follow all of the CBSSports.com bloggers at IonCFB. Be sure to stick around just after the break. Tom Vernelli is going to take us home. And welcome back to CBSSports.com College Football Podcast right here. We are coming down the stretch on the Weekend Picks panel. Our thanks to Brian and Jerry, of course, for their time. And Tom Vernelli, who almost hit on his upset pick. You know, he was the one that told you about Arizona and Oklahoma State. He dropped Clemson over Florida State. And when it was 28-14 in the third quarter, Tom, I thought that, as well as a lot of Clemson media people, were very ready to celebrate in your successful prediction until Florida State's comeback.
Yeah, I was feeling very good about myself until they went, what was it, a 28-0 run? What was something like that?
It was 35-3, and it included at one point a stretch of four straight touchdown drives with four straight three and outs on the other side of the ball.
Yeah, it got really ugly really fast. I mean, I was getting ready to be like, told you, nobody wanted to believe me, but yeah, I was trolling Florida State fans on Twitter and everything, and it came back on me.
It's all right. You did have your moment there for a little bit. And actually, I would like to start there with the Tigers. Number 17, Clemson, they need to bounce back. They need to have a big answer. Quarterback Taj Boyd called it, you know, one of the classic team leader calls of players only meetings. Dabo Sweeney said this week, he said, our players need to answer like champions. They travel up to Chestnut Hill to face Boston College, another division rival. 9.5 points is the spread. Do you have the Tigers covering, or do you see a little bit of a letdown after the loss to Florida State?
No, I don't see the letdown. I think they're going to be angry, and Boston College just isn't a very good team, to be honest. So I don't think Clemson's going to have any problem covering that spread this weekend, unless, you know, the team, Dabo is driving the team bus and they get pulled over for speeding. I don't see any problems in their future there.
Yeah, I have this spread opened at 11 and dropped, and I have no idea what the logic or thinking is, because while, as you know, you don't want to get cheesy and look at, you know, the things that aren't numbers sometimes, but Dabo's kind of that kind of guy. I mean, that's why he is making just a little bit more than his highly paid assistants, is because he's a great recruiter. He's, you know, very inspirational. He's a good leader of players and of people, and you're around him and you feel that. And I think that they've learned from their mistakes, especially when you look at the way they fizzled out last season following a loss. And so I think, like you said, they're going to come in angry. They're going to come in ready to make a statement. And this is the same Boston College team that gave up 42 points to Miami. And there is a ton more home run talent on Clemson. Absolutely with you. And actually, now that I think about it, yeah, all of CBSSports.com experts picked Clemson to cover in this one.
Yeah, that line just seemed odd to me. And it's like, I feel like it would be more. It's just, I think Vegas is thinking, since it's in Chestnut Hill, they don't want to, and it's a conference game, it's hard to make, you know, 14 to 20 point differential for a home team as an underdog. But I mean, I just don't see what Boston College can do to hang with Clemson. Unless Clemson just plays an absolutely terrible game and turns the ball over four or five times, I don't see it. I mean, I think it's one of those games that's going to be about 21-3 maybe at the end of the first quarter, and Clemson's just going to keep pulling away from there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go to Big Ten country, right up your neck of the woods. We got a pair of conference matchups. The first one, this is where game day is going to be, Ohio State against Michigan State. The spread, the way we picked it, is the Spartans -2.5. Tom, I'm looking at this game, and I'm wondering, who is going to sort of – Ohio State's got a lot of defensive issues. Michigan State is very one-dimensional offensively with just Le'Veon Bell. Braxton Miller is great, but sometimes he struggles a little bit. Michigan State's defense is phenomenal. I'm looking at this, and I could see a 9-6 just sort of ugly slugfest. Educate – how is this one going to play out?
Yeah, I was going to say, first team to 10 wins.
Yeah,
I'm not even saying that as a joke. I mean, if a team gets to 10 points, they're going to win this game. It's, yes, Ohio State's defense has had some trouble this year, but I don't see anything on Michigan State's defense that could really exploit it. Because like you said, it is one-dimensional with Le'Veon Bell. That's all Michigan State can do to move the ball. And if Ohio State's allowed to put eight guys in the box to stop the run, their defense is going to be just fine. But then at the flip side, Braxton Miller got destroyed by the Spartans defense last year. I think he finished with negative 27 yards rushing.
Jeez.
And I don't know if he's going to have the same kind of game that he's been having against the Spartans, but I still think that just because he's going to be the best player on that field on Saturday, I think at some point he's going to make a play, and Ohio State's going to win this game, and I definitely think they're covering the 2.5.
Yeah, the one thing that Ohio State's front line is solid. You know, the whole front seven's pretty good. If Andrew Maxwell could throw the ball, then yes, there would be a huge spot in Ohio State's defense to exploit, because the secondary can, you know, is a little bit weak. But, you know, we have seen nothing from Maxwell to lead me to believe that he's going to be able to get out there and take advantage of that. I agree with you. I think that the fact that Braxton Miller, I picked Ohio State to cover the spread as well. It's going to come down to one touchdown play at some point in the third or fourth quarter, and I just think there's more, you know, Braxton Miller provides that playmaking ability, and I completely agree with you. Staying in the Big Ten.
And if you look at last week, Eastern Michigan came into that game as like the 117th best defense in the country, and Michigan State still couldn't move the ball on them for three quarters. So, I mean, even if Ohio State's been having problems on defense, it's still a much better defense than Eastern Michigan. And there's just no reason to believe the Spartans are going to do anything on offense.
Yeah. I don't know. There's a lot. What's the, I guess, I was going to say, because it's just you, Brian, and myself taking the Buckeyes. Any idea what the thinking is everywhere else? What would the argument be for Michigan State, not only to win, but to win by a field goal?
Michigan State beat them last year. I guess that's what people are looking at. But, I mean, I think some folks, maybe our CBS brethren, are still putting a little too much stock in the Michigan State team from last year. Because this year, while the defense is still very good, it is just offensively, it is just a completely different team. It's not the same. There's not the same explosiveness. It's one-dimensional. It's just not the same team that we thought it was going to be. Like, you thought coming into the year there'd be an adjustment for this offense with Maxwell and the new receivers, but they haven't adjusted, and now it's reached Big Ten play. You know, they're not playing MAC teams anymore. I think people are still hung up on what they thought this team was going to be, and I just don't see it.
Wisconsin, another team that has not at all been the team that so many people thought they were going to be. They travel to go face Nebraska. This will be the unrivaled game, right? Isn't that the name of it? They both got the old Adidas uniforms. Nebraska favored by 13.5. How do you see this one playing out? And also, I really enjoyed your point. Tom, you know, at the beginning of this week broke down, the Big Ten is not really – it is definitely a down year, but this is not historically a terrible year. And so, you know, talk a little bit about how Wisconsin plays into that and let me know how you see this one playing out.
Well, statistically, the Big Ten win-loss record-wise is essentially the same this year as it's been for the past few years. The only difference is the teams at the top are having trouble. And the games that most of the country is seeing is Alabama just destroying Michigan. And Big Ten's not winning games against ranked teams. It's like people are saying, oh, they're losing to the MAC. Well, they've lost three games to the MAC, and true, that's three more than it should, but they still won 7 of the 10. And the teams that they've lost to the MAC are teams like Indiana. It's not exactly, you know, the Iowa loss is surprising, but if Indiana loses to Ball State, is anybody really all that surprised by it?
Yeah.
So I think it's more perception-wise, and I think it's just since the Big Ten has been trending downward for so long, I think that's playing a large role in it, where you see them lose to the MAC, and it's just like, oh, man, they're terrible. They're worse now than ever before, just because we're used to the Big Ten being bad lately. But I don't really think it is. As far as this game's concerned, the 13.5 seems like a lot to me, but the more I thought about it, I'm going with Nebraska, just because Wisconsin has this. They think they're going to have Monte Ball this weekend, which will definitely help. But they've also got Joel Stavi under center. And while he looked, you know, he didn't look great, but he looked pretty good in his first start against UTEP last week. There's a huge difference between making your first start at home against UTEP than there is going on the road for your first start outside of Madison against Nebraska in Lincoln. It's not, you know, the friendliest place. So I think Wisconsin's going to have trouble in offense. And Nebraska got Rex Burkhead back last week, and he looks fine. They've got four running backs on that team that could carry the ball. Taylor Martinez has looked well. And Wisconsin's defense has looked a little soft at times, too. So I don't think it'll be a blowout per se, but I still think Nebraska's going to cover this by two touchdowns. I think it could be like a 31-17 game.
Yeah, I'm on this same podcast last week, you and I talked about how with Burkhead coming back, we thought that there was no way that they would slow down because they want to make sure they've got, you know, the running game back in full force, and they absolutely dropped the
destroyed.
Hammer.
I don't think it was the game where halfway through the first quarter you're sitting there thinking, just go to the running clock. Seriously, this is mean, because it was 35-0 7 minutes into that game.
Yeah, it's just sort of like you look at that factor, and then, you know, if you're making a selection against the spread, you know that if Monte Ball's a late scratch, you don't want to necessarily have that be the reason why you go down. There's too many factors pointing me towards Nebraska rather than, you know, making me want to shy away. Even at 13.5, I'm right there with you. I don't see any way Nebraska loses, and if they don't cover, it is a very, very surprising backdoor cover.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked by that at all if Wisconsin just grabbed a late touchdown or a field goal to cover it.
All right, let's go to a pair of matchups in the Big 12. Let's start at number 25, Baylor, at number 9, West Virginia. This is the Mountaineers' Big 12 debut. It'll be in Morgantown, and they are favored by 12.5. First of all, where would you set the over-under for this game?
I'd probably start at 80.
Yeah.
And that might even be a bit conservative.
Because, I mean, the West Virginia's defense does not look great. They allowed 21 points to Maryland, and they sort of – and the biggest thing about those 21 points is they just didn't really get to Perry Hills. They allowed the freshman quarterback to get comfortable. They sort of forgot where Stephon Diggs was from time to time, which you can't do. And then, you know, you go against Baylor, and Baylor has no defense. Absolutely no defense.
None. I mean, there's 11 guys out there, but they're not really doing anything.
It's actually just 11 of those obstacles, just like the cutouts. It's a sled. Yeah, they've just got 11 different sled pieces all around. How do you see it playing out? Do you see the Mountaineers covering 12.5? I mean, obviously, both teams are going to score, so always a difficult game. These shootouts are very difficult to pick, especially when the spread is just under 2 touchdowns.
Well, first, before we get to picking the spread, I would just like to thank the schedule makers for actually giving us a good game during the day this week, which they did not do last week when every single game that you wanted to watch was on at the same time in prime time. But this Saturday, we're starting our day off with a matchup of top 25 teams. So thank whoever's in charge of timing the games for that. As far as the game goes, I think West Virginia is going to do, I think West Virginia will cover this. Like you said, the defense definitely worried me after seeing the game against Maryland. Because, I mean, really, the first few weeks, while it wasn't playing great, the West Virginia defense wasn't that bad either. But then when you give up 21 points to Maryland, you're kind of like, well, I don't know. But Baylor can keep up, I think, on offense. But I don't think Baylor, with that defense, can afford to punt a single time. And if it does, then they're dead. And I think Baylor's going to punt or turn the ball over at some point. I mean, Nick Florence isn't RG3. That offense is still good without Griffin, but it's not the same.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. It really isn't the same. And I think that Holgorsen was pretty disappointed. Interestingly enough, I'm looking at West Virginia's ground game in this one. I think I've got West Virginia to cover as well. I don't have it in front of me. But that will be a big factor at whether or not we can treat West Virginia like a top 10 team, because they were absolutely shut down in the rushing game against Maryland. Geno Smith also, he was not sacked all season until that game, and he was brought down twice in the first half. I think that this will be a game when Sean Alston, who missed last week, needs to come in and show that West Virginia can be more than just one-dimensional, because otherwise people will do more of what Maryland did and just send an extra blitzer every single time and force Geno to throw more checkdowns. Now, when you've got Tavon Austin as one of your checkdowns, that 2-yard pass can go 82 yards. But, you know, that's not going to happen every single time. I've also got West Virginia to cover, but I think this is the kind of test that can let us know whether or not West Virginia can compete for a Big 12 title.
And, you know, I think it's possible that West Virginia might have got caught looking ahead a little bit last week.
Yeah.
You know, because it is their first Big 12 game. So I think, you know, it's not good to say the word, but you think they might have been taking Maryland for granted just a little bit and then got hit in the mouth and were, you know, had to get up again.
Yeah.
But so I think it's definitely possible that West Virginia didn't look very good last week just because they were kind of looking more towards starting Big 12 play for the first time.
You got number 12 Texas. They are traveling to Stillwater to play Oklahoma State. Unranked Oklahoma State, just a 2.5-point underdog. This really figures to be, this is at that sort of 8 o'clock Fox slot that the Big 12 looks like they will move into and sort of own. And this one is again, just like West Virginia, this is one of those games where you look at it, and after Texas, you know, Ole Miss was a little bit of a challenge, but I'm fascinated to see how the Longhorns perform in this game. It could be the kind of coming out party that this team needs. How do you see this one playing out, and what's your pick?
Well, you know, this game opened, when the line first opened, Oklahoma State was a 5.5-point favorite, and it was only a matter of hours before it switched to Texas -2.5. And I think that's a pretty good indication that people really just don't believe in this Oklahoma State team, because, first of all, the loss to Arizona definitely hurt people's faith in it. And it's just with the you know, there's some questions at quarterback with Lunt. And Texas has just looked really, really good, like good enough to where you're sitting there thinking, okay, you know, Texas might actually be back and be for real and might win the Big 12 this year, because they've got three running backs, all of whom could be a starter on most teams. and they're all sharing the ball. They're all running very well. The quarterback play by David Ash has been much improved this year. I think that Texas is a favorite on the road against, you know, Oklahoma State for a reason, and I'm taking Texas to cover this spread.
Yeah, I am too. I think that this is going to be a great example of what Mac Brown has been trying so hard to build for the last three seasons. I think they pound the ball. I think that no matter who's under center, if it's Lunt, if it's – I mean, Texas's secondary is so good, and they're so good at getting after the passer. Whoever's under center, doesn't matter. I think that they will struggle early, and Texas has, you know, with those three running backs, they it seems like they really are going to go, you know, SEC style. If they can get a two-score lead or even, you know, a 10-point lead, they are going to be able to pound the ball, dictate the pace of the game, and that's exactly what Oklahoma State does not want to let happen.
Yeah, Texas, along with Kansas State, is really one of the only two teams in that conference that are built to stop the other teams in that conference, if you know what I mean, with like the spread offense, because like you said, with the three running backs, Texas can control the ball. They can control the time of possession and keep that Oklahoma State offense off the field. And Texas's defense is good enough that even when it is on the field, it can match up with Oklahoma State at every spot on the line, at the receiver position, and linebackers. They can win each one of those matchups. So, I mean, Texas, to me, they're a favorite. That's why they're the favorite, and that's why they're going to win. I think they're just the better team.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. All right, Tom, it is that time. What is your big upset pick, big declaration for week five?
Well, you know, technically my upset pick is Ohio State. But there's not really a lot of great upset material out there. In this game, I wouldn't say it's a big upset pick. It was just a line that surprised me, and I think it's easy money if you really want to bet it. Missouri is an underdog on the road against Central Florida this weekend.
Yep.
And I know that Missouri got embarrassed last weekend by South Carolina, but Central Florida is quite a bit different from South Carolina, and I think Missouri will be just fine this weekend, and they're getting points. So if I was a gambler, I would probably get to my nearest bookmaker friend and put money down on Missouri and take the points before it changes.
Yeah, Missouri is so much better than Central Florida. That better team argument, yeah. This is really the same Missouri team that we were picking as a, what, 1-point underdog against Georgia? It's not like going to Central Florida is going into, you know, Tiger Stadium or some sort of big home field advantage. Missouri is almost better at every position. It's the most shocking line on the board, no doubt.
Yeah, I think people are just overreacting way too much to what they saw against South Carolina last week, because that South Carolina defense is quite a bit different than that Central Florida defense, and I don't see the Tigers having any problems putting up points.
Yeah, no, not at all. All right, well, that wraps it up. Best of luck to all of you. Hope that our selections have helped guide you in your picks this coming weekend in Week 5. Remember that all the CBSSports.com college football podcasts, you can go and get them for free at iTunes, whether it be with Jeremy Fowler, the Dodcast. We got Matt Hinton on the Mid-Majors. It's been a real busy week, and we appreciate you hanging out. Thanks so much, and enjoy week 5.